GM, welcome to Lexline, brought to you in conjunction with our friends at Rug Radio, where we talk about the new and latest legal developments in blockchain, NFT, and cryptocurrency law. Nothing we talk about should be considered legal or financial advice. If you have a specific legal question, of course, you should consult a lawyer. You should do that privately, not on a recorded Twitter space, because we do record these, and they are available later for rebroadcast across our podcast platforms, Apple and Spotify particularly. Thank you for joining the conversation today. I wanted to talk a little bit about something that I've been giving some thought to, which is what lessons from U.S. history can help to inform and predict future outcomes for crypto regulation. You know, we're seeing a lot of proposed legislation coming down right now, and that legislation is aimed at trying to bring some clarity to this sector. And that's kind of gotten my wheels turning, because one of the things that I see is a real push and pull between just how dependent crypto is on the law to survive and thrive, and also how it's in constant conflict with those who are proposing changes to the law that impact crypto. This constant push and pull is certainly something that makes basically any consideration of regulation in this space a debate. It covers issues of KYC. It covers issues of taxation, regulation, and of course, the ultimate battleground, which is decentralized platforms. And much of the regulation that's out there presents a potential threat to the pure decentralized notion of blockchain technology. So that is certainly something that is in the mix and subject to debate. So I wanted to talk a little bit about what we can pull from history and maybe some examples of other very, very transformative technological movements that necessitated regulation as a means of bringing clarity to the industry, fair competition, and protection of consumers. So I broke it down into basically three examples I wanted to talk about today. The first being railroads and the Sherman Antitrust Act. For those not familiar, the Sherman Antitrust Act of 1890 was a piece of legislation that was passed by Senator John Sherman, who sponsored it in Congress. And it was intended to prohibit anti-competitive agreements and what they would call unilateral conduct that would monopolize or attempt to monopolize the railroad marketplace. It gave the Department of Justice the authority to enforce and bring suits in that action for any private sector players in the railroad industry who were trying to monopolize use of the railway system. So basically, think about the internet today, think about telecommunications. The first form of that was the railroad system. And the railroad system, of course, was built on public land by the government, but it was very quickly monopolized by the railroad barons of the day. And that created an unfair monopoly for the cost of moving things. So what can we learn from that that we can apply to crypto? Well, railroads were certainly an innovative piece of technology. By controlling the price and the access to the freight cars, of course, that created an unfair monopoly. And just like the railroads, cryptocurrency and blockchain technology have a great potential to transform the modern economy in this country and around the world. And with that comes the same sort of challenges as far as who can monopolize. Well, who can monopolize? Of course, centralized platforms that can move price one way or the other. And we've seen examples of that out there. They can manipulate the market. Large holders like whales who can execute trades and influence the movement of tokens. We've seen that. We saw an example of that in the Mango case. And then, of course, the mining pools, if they are able to unify, can certainly have almost a monopolistic influence. You add to that the fraud and the potential criminal abuse of the blockchain, and that's why investigators and regulators are looking so closely at the space. So we can pull some lessons from what was done with respect to railroads and the Sherman Antitrust Act and apply those, because we're probably going to see a lot of debate coming down, and we already are to a certain extent, about the ongoing struggle between centralized and decentralized approaches to blockchain technology, as well as this issue of KYC, know your customer, and anti-money money laundering concerns when it comes to identifying the sources of transactions and the players in transactions. All of this intended to bring legislative clarity and regulation. Another example that I thought was interesting, and which I think could be a good predictive model of what we're going to see when it comes to potential regulation and legislation, is the Telecommunications and Communications Act of 1934. Now, that's outdated. It's been replaced by the 1996 Telecommunications Act. But if we draw back into history, President Roosevelt felt it necessary to create something new to deal with a new and innovative technology, that being wire communications and radio and the ability to communicate over long distances and how that would impact commerce in this country. So Roosevelt proposed formation of the Federal Communications Commission with a mandate of bringing continuity, regulation and oversight, and protecting national defense for the purpose of promoting the safety of wire and radio communications and access to those communications. So how can we tie that back to what's happening right now in crypto legislation? That got my wheels turning again. If we look at the parallels, we know that the FCC was created with the goal of regulating interstate and international communications by radio, television, wire, satellite, and cable, ultimately. Obviously, it started with just the very rudimentary technology and then got replaced by the 1996 version. But this regulatory body was there to help promote competition, fair competition, ensure service across the country, which is important, and manage limited resources, like limited bandwidth of radio frequencies. So how do we analogize this as a predictor for crypto legislation? Obviously, it's still very unclear who's going to come out on top when it comes to regulating the space. The FCC was formed to regulate wire communications and radio. The CFTC and the SEC are in a current regulatory vacuum here, trying to figure out who's going to be the primary regulator of crypto. Are we going to see some kind of a hybrid regulatory body, maybe something like an FCC that will emerge? We know, and Birdnalls, you've talked about this, and we've talked about this, we know that there are certain bills right now that are proposing a more specific to crypto sort of a regulatory body. Some are proposing dividing up crypto between CFTC and SEC. Some of the proposed bills are talking about having special think tanks within these agencies. Will we see a crypto-dedicated regulatory agency? Probably unlikely, but certainly something to consider in the debate. The last one I want to talk about when it comes to potential correlations and predictors for what we can see in blockchain and blockchain legislation is, of course, the infamous internet and dot-com bubble. I'm sure that everyone can relate to and remember the massive uptake between 1995 and 2000 in investment in technology. We just saw a roaring boom in interest in regulation, in, I should say, investment in technology sector and the internet, which sparked a dot-com stock market bubble that ultimately burst. During that frenzied time, anything that had a dot-com at the end of it and was a startup would just see amazing returns, kind of like we saw in the early days of NFTs and crypto. But that largely cooled off after the bottom fell and a lot of these companies were found to not really have sustainable business models, have any real roadmap for success. And a lot of them, like the famous, you know, we know the pets.com and all those things that were mentioned during that time, they essentially were boom and bust, And it's kind of a parallel to what we're seeing right now, because if we look at what's happening in this bear market, where we've seen FTX, Celsius, Luna, all these other major platform controversies that have exposed lack of internal regulation of these companies, lack of real clarity as to what's going on, lack of potential consumer protections, we're seeing sort of a repeat of the dot-com bubble bust. But of course, we know, because we're in this space head down every day, we know that we're probably starting to turn the corner here, and we're starting to see clarity, and we're starting to see the Amazons, the Googles, and the other major tech players that survived the dot-com bust reemerge on the other side. So we're sort of seeing the same pattern right now when it comes to crypto. Just like at the end of the dot-com bubble era, there was legislation proposed to try and bring clarity and government enforcement to protect consumers from highly speculative trading. Kind of a repeat of what we're seeing now. We know the mantra for legislation right now is to protect consumers. So I think we can see the dot-com bubble era as a potential predictive model of what we may see come down the road here. All interesting. Now, to wrap this up, I do want to bring up Sandman shortly to talk about something exciting he's doing. But to wrap up today's conversation, I think some of the lessons we can draw from these three significant historic events is that, one, regulation is inevitable. We've seen it in railroads, telecommunications, and the internet. We've seen it wherever new technology has had a potential for rapid growth and disruption. It's obvious that regulation is a given when you see this sort of innovation happening this fast and furious. So as crypto continues to grow and become more integrated into every part of our financial system, and we're seeing that every day, obviously, it's inevitable we're going to see comprehensive regulation. There's no stopping it. So what do we have to do? We have to be very mindful of how it's executed. Now, we know, secondly, that regulation usually aims to protect consumers and promote fair competition. Talked about the examples in the Sherman Act, the Communications Act, and the aftermath of the dot-com bubble. So for crypto, regulators are also aiming to protect investors from scams, to protect against the market manipulation that we've seen in cases like Mango and so forth, to ensure transparency of transactions, which invites KYC, which is something that's going to be top of mind in the debate in crypto, and to avoid the monopolization of crypto marketplaces by whales and centralized platforms that can manipulate and can disrupt markets very easily. Thirdly, regulation should not kill innovation. It should lend to the growth of innovation. So the frameworks that I discussed previously, all the changes that came after the dot-com bubble, after the Sherman Act, and after the Telecommunications Act, they all led to more emphasis on sustainable business models as opposed to highly speculative, risky gambles. The regulation and oversight of the crypto space could well bring more compliant, transparent, and sustainable projects into the mix. And this, of course, will bring, hopefully, investors, builders, and users of this technology back into the mix. Fourth, I think that regulation, and we see this, we can see this from history, is usually reactive as opposed to proactive, I think. Historically, the regulation comes in fast and furious because of scandals like what we saw in the dot-com bubble and what we're seeing today with all these crypto platform scandals, FTX, Celsius, and the like. So I think similarly, crypto regulation is going to trigger, obviously, a reactive response from legislators and regulators. And now we need to balance that reactive approach with proactive measures to make sure that it is measured and that it is comprehensive, but also continues to foster innovation in the space. So that's my fifth point. We have to balance regulation and innovation. That's the challenge. We have to strike a balance between those two things in a very complex technology, which is evolving in real time at a speed to which we can barely keep up with. But it's critically important that we temper those two things if we're going to see this technology thrive. Sixth point I wanted to make, and final point on this subject, is we need to have global coordination. You know, the telecommunications reforms had that in mind because they quickly realized that these technologies like wire and radio were going to unify the world, flatten the world, if you might say. And we can see the correlations here in crypto and blockchain doing the same thing. So some of the proposed legislation that we're seeing has an aim and an objective of looking at what's going on around the world and trying to collaborate on a global scale to make sure we have unified regulation. This is critically important because we don't want to get left behind, and we want to be in a dialogue with other countries that are innovating in this space. So I think on a whole, all these lessons that we can learn from all of this, as far as what is required to establish clear legal definitions in this space for crypto assets, what's a broker is something we've talked about before and how that's going to be defined, setting the rules for how to launch coin offerings, implementing security measures to protect against hacks and fraud, developing guidelines for how crypto assets will be taxed and traded, and the KYC components that come with all of that, and the anti-money laundering components that are going to inevitably be a part of that conversation. All of this is going to need to be resolved in a very pragmatic way, because to sort of close this point before I bring up the Sandman, what we need to see happen here is we need to see these things addressed, because we know that regulation is inevitable. History is a good predictor. Every time we've seen a major innovative change in technology, we've seen regulation come. This is no different. So I hope you enjoyed that conversation, and we can certainly kind of vibe on that a little bit. But Sandman, you're doing something pretty exciting soon, and you reached out to me, and I always love talking to you, and you're lifting up artists in this space. So can you please tell the crowd a little bit about what you're doing? And as you know, we generally don't get a huge audience for LexLine because it's in the middle of the workday and we mostly cater to lawyers, but people do listen after the fact, and people do subscribe and listen to the podcast. So I'll put this out as soon as possible to get as much exposure for what you're hosting. But talk about this gallery event you're doing, Sandman.
So yeah, thank you. Just to speak briefly about this, along with Colborn of the Museum of Crypto, curated a show in Kingston, New York, and it opened on July 1st. It's closing July 30th is the last day, but we're and this past week we've had a radio interview on Radio Kingston, which is can be found in my timeline and all that, and the link that I sent you from the askforarts.org website. There's some details there, and we hosted panels this past weekend on Saturday. Food Masku, Brian Brinkman, Quantum Variant, and myself spoke to about 30 people who were able to ask questions and, the doubts about crypto and Bitcoin and all those types of questions, as well as just digging in deeper into the technology and what it means for artists and the benefits that blockchain offers. This weekend, we've got a talk with Kenny Schachter at 2 p.m. at the Art Society of Kingston, 97 Broadway, Kingston, New York. And a closing reception to follow, 3 to 5. And it's included, 42 artworks. I think about 38 total artists. There's a few artists that were, two artworks were entered. But it was really about exposing, the local community to NFTs and all the different variety of artworks and diversity of people working worldwide. We've got artists from Argentina, Brazil, Iran, Hong Kong, China, United States, Canada, et cetera, et cetera. some very prominent artists that were curated out of our collections, as well as an open call that went out through the Ask for Art. So received about 150 artworks that way, and then filled in some gaps of, you know, different types of work that we felt were important to share and just show, you know, video animation and 3D and AI and all different types of artworks, as well as some physicals tied to tokens and the blockchain. So looks to be, you know, it's been a kind of, you know, fun experiment, and we've had a lot of good feedback from the community, and got several artists of the organization sort of interested in NFTs. So I think it's, you know, it's been overall a success, but it's just needs, you know, it's a building block. It's one, you know, one step in the longer journey to sort of ease people's fears and doubts about it, and new ways of presenting their work and reach the global market. So it's been a lot of fun.
I love it. And I think I know why we have such a small crowd today. While you were talking, Sandman, I'm looking through the thread, and I've seen several people comment to me that my space is looking like details not available is what the X factor is showing people who are trying to tune in. So this will be something that I'll definitely have to put out in podcast format and get the word out. Arg, what's good? Thank you. I'm guessing you jumped up immediately to speak because you wanted to give me the heads up that I've been rugged. Is that what's going on?
No. I wanted to talk about the railroads a little bit.
Oh, yeah, man.
So this is actually something that I've been studying recently for a presentation. My concentration is labor and employment law. And so I've been looking back at industrial history and the, you know, the formation of organized labor.
You actually shared the Sherman Act when I posted my little think tweet last
I
night.
Did.
I think it was you that talked about it. Yeah, awesome. Yeah, man, build on that. I'd love to hear what your thoughts are on this since you're actually working
on
it.
So 1869, the Transcontinental Railroad was completed. So you could move across the country in about 6 days, when prior to that, it was somewhere between 3 and 6 months. So this was an enormous change in history. And it didn't take long after that for the railroads, who, you know, they were monopolies, to really start abusing their employees, unilateral pay cuts, and that sort of thing. So in 1877, there was a huge strike that started in Virginia and spread along basically the major railroad routes. And this strike ended up with like battles. It was war, essentially. National Guard was called in at various places. There's a battle in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, where the National Guard was actually overrun by striking employees. They went and hid in a railroad roundabout, and the employees lit train cars on fire and crashed them into the roundabout. Many, many casualties over the course of this period. This is not the only time in history that that happened on the railroads. It happened again in 1894. In Chicago, there was a massive boycott, and these strikes completely ground the economy to a halt. So people shipping corn, people shipping livestock, you know, it stopped across the entire country. And obviously the government had a big interest in this, having granted land to the railroads, and, you know, using public funds to build the railroads. And the railroads had a lot of influence. And so they got federal troops to come in and put down the strikers. They'd fix their bayonets. And, you know, if that didn't do the job, they would shoot. And there were, again, massive casualties during this period where labor conflict really was, you know, close to insurrection and war. And so even before the Sherman Act, the organization of these employees, and I say organization loosely because they weren't formed into unions like we think of them today. They weren't like structured organizations top down necessarily. The 1877 strike was spontaneous, not organized by anybody. And so those were kind of, in my view, decentralized acts and power grabs. It was people fighting against the system. And so if you kind of look at today, you know, the correlation there, or, you know, what you might compare that to is, you know, just take cryptocurrencies as a movement, a nonviolent movement to grab the power back from the banks and you know, the financial institutions that have so much control over our daily lives.
Fantastic. I mean, you lend a lot of color to the backstory. So you agree that you can see that as being a potential predictive model of what regulation is going to look like on the other side here. Obviously not without the bayonets and without the violence, but highly disruptive, critical to commerce, I would say, and also top of mind for regulators. And a lot of people, including BlackRock, have an interest in coming into this. So there's a lot of money on the line. So a lot of correlations.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely. And, you know, the development of the law surrounding it took decades to get right. So, you know, they passed the Sherman Act in 1890. But that didn't really fix everything. It wasn't really enforced all that well in its early days. And so, and actually when it did start to be enforced, you know, the general, I don't know, the general understanding I think most people have of the Sherman Act is that it prevents two people from colluding in restraint of trade. So me and you can't agree to set our prices if we should be in competition with each other in a way that restrains trade in the marketplace. And that law was actually used to attack labor unions because essentially what they were doing is they were just coworkers, colleagues who were coordinating with each other to withhold labor. And while it wasn't initially intended to go after, the Sherman Act was intended to go after the large monopolies, it started being used to go after the unions who were fighting the monopolies. And so it wasn't until about 25 years later that they passed the Clayton Act, which amended the Sherman Act to exclude organized labor. So I think, you know, taking from that, what we can expect is there will be laws that are passed. They won't do what the regulators expect them to, or they will be used in ways that are not consistent with their intent. And it's going to be an ongoing fight for many years to come. So this round of legislation is not going to be the final end-all, you know, determination of what blockchain looks like in the U.S.
I love it because I think we can learn a lot from history. And, you know, it's funny, we can take this actually even outside of crypto and look at what's happening with Amazon right now and the strikes that are going on there, which threaten to bring commerce in this country to a screeching halt as well. And it'll be interesting to see how that all unfolds because Amazon is deeply integrated into the movement of goods and could have a tremendous disruptive effect if these people, you know, continue to stay on that side of the line and fight for what they believe are rights that they should have as employees.
The Teamsters strike too with UPS. They're not striking yet, but I think it's only a matter of time.
Wow, it's funny, man. History rhymes,
it
doesn't
does.
It? Phenomenal. Arg, I love it. I cannot wait to put this one out into the world. Sandman, thank you for joining the conversation. I will definitely try to get this out in advance of your co-curated gallery showing. I wish you all the best with it. And I'm sorry we didn't have a big crowd today, but I think I know why. I've seen several spaces posting about this technical glitch that's going on right now. So something's happening, and we'll just see how X works it all out. But I'll definitely get this thing out in podcast at least so we can spread the word. I always love having these conversations. Thank you so much for joining, and we'll be back at it. I'm going to be a special guest on Friday, going to do an early show. Will not be doing my show, so I'll put out some content about what's going on with that. But there'll be no LexLine Friday, but I will be joining another space to talk about legislation. So stay tuned for that. And thank you to everyone. Have a wonderful, wonderful day. Appreciate you as always.